Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast. Coming up tonight on the program, Crew SC draw the Class of the West Vancouver Whitecaps. Tony Chani and Kakuna Mane go pound for pound and round for round. Who really won that trade? And the black and gold welcome in the New York Red Bulls to Moffray Stadium on Saturday evening. Might they be the U.S. Open Cup champions? And we're joined by co-host and Columbus Dispatch beat writer Andrew Erickson. So sit back, grab a refreshment, and drive to Grandma's with your earbuds on. But do so soon. The Massive Report Podcast is coming up.
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report Podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head over to landgrantbrewing.com for more info and the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. Head to www.oldnortharcade.com for more information as well. It is episode, I believe, 245 of this very distinguished, I'm getting a nod from Ralph, so I'm going to go with that podcast. We're recording on September the 18th. Do a quick rule call for our normal cast of cohorts, myself being Bart Logan. We've got Patrick Murphy with us. Patrick Murphy, how you doing?
Good. I'm still trying to find the replays from the broadcast of the game this weekend because they did not show the appropriate ones.
Yeah, that's what you get with that Canadian broadcasting.
True.
I believe they also, it's backwards up there or something, or on the left side of the road, something to that effect.
According to Kyle Aaron.
Yeah. Oh. Hinting at his presence there with that little yelp, I think it was. Ralph Schudell. Ralph, how are we doing?
Yeah, I don't understand how they do gas up there, too. Leaders, who's got time for that?
Yeah, leaders, all that stuff, the metric system, it's ridiculous. Alex Stanek will not be joining us tonight. Last I heard, he's probably just extolling some third graders on the virtues of 1-0, 5 in the back, 2 shot on goal, Italian League soccer. I'm sure he's going to be back with us shortly next week. But we had to scramble to find a capable replacement, and instead we had to settle for Andrew Erickson, crew beat writer for the local newspaper. That's that thing the kids are reading these days instead of just on their cell phones, the Columbus Dispatch. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, and you know I think it's fitting. I've been told I have a face for a print newspaper, so everything works out in the end. But.
Well, Andrew, I do have to tell you before we all really get started. Look, this podcast we've worked really hard over 244 episodes to cultivate a sterling reputation for our thoughtful, objective analysis and commentary. And you better not mess this up for us, man.
Yeah, okay. I hope episode 245 is not the 245th and final episode. So we'll hope there is a 246 at some point.
Yeah, we've survived this long. We'll be okay.
Exactly. Right. We should be all right. Crew surviving last weekend, and we've got a lot to talk about from that game. A 2-2 draw, but still not short of plenty of storylines, even if the score line was even. So we'll break down that. Look at some the matchup that everybody was talking about going into it. Tony Chani versus Kakuta Mane. See if those performances in that game validate that trade earlier this year for either of the clubs involved. We'll look a little bit elsewhere around the soccer world. We've got the U.S. Open Cup Final coming up. Some other games from around MLS last weekend. See how Crew SC's playoff chances stand with just 4 games remaining. And then, of course, preview the upcoming match against the New York Red Bulls. Red Bull New York, whatever it is we want to call them. But first, let's head back out to Vancouver. Last weekend to that big draw between Columbus and Vancouver. I know Patrick and Andrew, both of you guys were able to cover this game. Not lacking for draws, Patrick Murphy, lacking for goals there, sorry, Patrick Murphy, but a couple goals from a couple players in Ola Kamara, one who's been consistent, especially in this stretch, and then Kakutamane, who had probably his best game in a black and gold uniform.
I agree. I think Kakuta played hands down his best game, and we've seen some pretty good performances out of Kakuta this year. It looked a lot like the Kakuta from 2 years ago that, you know, was climbing up the Vancouver Whitecaps scoring charts. They showed that during the broadcast, at least on the Toronto broadcast, or the Vancouver broadcast, sorry. But I think this game was interesting for a lot of reasons. You know, you got the team's two top goal scorers trading goals early on, Freddie Montero getting one that, you know, close to being offside. They went to review. It looked to me like he was leaning a little bit. Review ended up calling it on, so, you know, they played with the lead after that. That was in the 15th minute. Ola Kamara continues his run of goals as of late, scoring just 4 minutes later on a cross from Kakutamane, and you saw Kakuta play real wide there, going 1v1 against his defender. You know, something we haven't seen a ton of. He's been tucked in a lot this year, and I think we saw how effective he can be as he plays as a true winger on that cross, and Ola with a nice finish there off kind of the bottom of his shoe. And then the second half, Vancouver comes out, has a really good chance early that goes off the post. Columbus control a little bit of the play thereafter, get a goal from Kakuta off an assist from Will Trapp, just a rifle of a shot. Then it's kind of back and forth. Both teams had chances. Late, Vancouver really pushed to get at least a draw to that. And as you mentioned, Tony Chani finishes it off in the 92nd minute on a cross from Freddie Montero. So, ends 2-2. Both teams have the guys who were swapped in the trade score. Something of note, neither player celebrated scoring against their old team, which I think is a classy move. Tony almost did. I think just the excitement of scoring in the 92nd minute, but held it in, and, you know, a classy move by both of them, I would say.
It certainly was, and of course that goal coming, as you mentioned, 93rd minute, coming just 10 minutes after Crew SC subbed off Pedro for a third defender in Alex Crenali. And I know, Andrew, you broke this down, that entire play, the goal, and spoke with Greg Berhalter and the staff about how that was a learning moment, hopefully, at least, Greg, once for this team. And could you maybe expand upon that a little bit more, break down that breakdown in the defense for Columbus?
Yeah, I think there's an attacking play for the Crew in which Justin Merrim attempts to dribble by a defender, and then possession changes. Vancouver dribbles down the field. Nerwinski gets a little bit of space and lofts a ball overhead. I think there's a corner mix in there somewhere, but Nerwinski gets the ball, you know, I think just beyond midfield and lofts it toward the box. Kendall Watson actually sets a pick, it looks like, on Harrison Offal to kind of get him some space away from Freddie Montero. Montero gets the ball. Josh Williams gives him, 2 to 3 yards to work with, and that gives him enough space to, cross a ball over to Tony Chani, who finishes for, a pretty easy goal once the ball's up in the air. It's a goal and a type of situation that really hurt the Crew a lot last year. They had, led the league with 22 goals allowed after the 75th minute. I think, Pat, nod your head if that's right, because I think that's at least close.
That sounds correct to me.
Yeah, from the eye test, that sounds right too. Yeah.
Right, and so this year they've been, at least they've not been great, but they haven't been awful in that category. I think that was the 12th after the 75th minute they've had this year. But if you're talking about a young group that's looking to potentially advance in the playoffs, you're looking at a group that realistically probably is going to get the fifth or sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, and that means you're going to open the playoffs on the road in a tough environment, likely a Chicago or maybe an Atlanta. And that means if you get a lead, you're going to have to be able to preserve it. So they had the lead for 28 minutes in this game, but couldn't hang on to it. And so in that sense, it's a teaching moment. Can you be better in that 90 to 120 seconds to be able to finish out the game. There's a part of it that's tactical. I think they gave a few players too much space to be able to get rid of the ball. But there's a part of it that's mental, too. Can you be tough enough to finish out those moments? In this game, they weren't, but, you know, we'll see how they improve over the next 4 to 5 weeks.
And you mentioned, you know, 4 to 5 weeks, only I believe those four games remaining for Columbus, still in the, above the red line, still at least two games between them in Montreal if they were to overtake them. But still, it looks like, Ralph, a chance that Columbus would like to have definitely have come away with all three of those points. And obviously, we'll look at the defensive miscue. We look at the defensive miscue on that goal in the 93rd minute. But there were a lot of opportunities for this team, especially in the first half, off the foot of Ola Kamara, and it was a defensive miscue again in that led to the one goal on that otherwise looked like it was dominated by Columbus Crew.
Yeah, you know, and I do want to apologize. I know I said last week that Ola had the yips, as Patrick so eloquently pointed out. So I do kind of want to eat crow. It's nice to say, you know.
Yeah, you know, just the leading goal scorer, scored in four straight matches, I believe. You know,
you know.
Did you look that word up?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But
homework complete.
Yes, exactly. flying colors. But anyway, you know, the course. Crow tastes good in this instance, so we'll say it that way. From the perspective of seeing this game, you go out anytime you get on the road and you think, boy, it'd be nice to get 3 points, but I'll settle for one. As the game continued on, and especially after Mane let that laser go in about the 69th minute, I believe, and you see that there is a chance that Crew SC can come out with all 3 points against the Western Conference leading team, you're sitting there thinking, this is really nice build-up, particularly going into the later part of the year, and you know, it's disheartening to see it kind of unravel in the 92nd minute when Chani gets that goal, but you know, I'll take a point against the Western Conference leaders, although I'm not satisfied, I'm also not disappointed.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to look at it, and I think you kind of hit on both of those, Ralph. On one, you give up a potential for 3 points on the road, which obviously this team has only done 3 times this year. On the other side, you're headed towards the playoffs. You're a team that's now 6 games without a loss, playing pretty good soccer. And you know, if this is a playoff matchup, let's say, you went on the road and got a result, which is what you need to do on the playoffs. You know, get the game back, get the result at home, get a tie on the road. That's how you advance in the way of the two-legged series that they have. So I think that this team is showing capable things going on the road. Obviously, 3 points would have helped them quite a bit, you know, especially with the teams in hand, potentially, you know, moving up a playoff spot. Andrew mentioned you're probably going to have to go on the road to start the playoffs. Well, you know, you get a win in a situation like that, maybe you have a chance of hosting a playoff game. So, you know, I think you can look at it from either side. The way it happened, I think, was what really was disheartening for Crew fans, just because, you know, you do have the lead going into stoppage time, and it is kind of this same old song and dance, giving up a late goal. You know, you bring in defensive reinforcements and Alex Crenali, and yet you still can't hold a one goal lead. You know, so I see both sides of it, but I think, you know, all in all, you know, I was predicting a loss on the road. I think getting a point is probably something they'll settle with. You know, just kind of disappointing how it happens again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Pat, to your point, you know, I really don't think it's the end of the world, and I completely agree with that. I think the one thing to take away from it is it does affect how much you can achieve in the Eastern Conference standings. I think,
sure,
you know, realistically, fifth or sixth is something they can attain. I think that's right there. If you can beat the Red Bulls, I think you're maybe looking at fifth, as long as you don't fall apart those last three games. The thing that Ola Kamara mentioned today, and the reason why the team in particular was so disappointed with this performance, is because you win this game, potentially fourth is in play. You know, you potentially have a chance to host a knockout round game. Then you start to get into the issues of parking and the Quarter Horse Congress. And I don't think that's something the team's going to have to worry about. But I think it is worth noting that in addition to the fan base, the team was incredibly disappointed with that, just because of, you know, they felt like they played better than Vancouver. They felt like they were able to control possession. And against a team like that, I don't think that it's that big of an achievement. They're last in the league in possession, but they were able to control the game. They were able to attack with confidence. You have Kakuta Mane playing really well on the left side. You have Lalas Abubakar, aside from the first goal, doing okay in a two-in-the-back system in place of Jonathan Mensah. And, you know, for the most part, you play like you should have won that game. But, yeah, Pat, you just said let's look at the defensive issues so we can kind of transition into that.
And certainly, that you know, that is the one of the issues with this team. As you've seen, there's just no consistency in terms of personnel or performances on that back line, whether it's three in the back, whether it's four in the back, whether it's Josh Williams with Lalas Abubakar, as we saw today or last weekend, or prior Josh Williams and Jonathan Mensah. You've seen so many different combinations up there. And it seems like it's probably hard for any of these guys to really develop any very strong chemistry. And chemistry seemed to be at least a partial culprit in that goal conceded, that initial goal for Vancouver.
I think, well, we have to remember first that, you know, they were without Jonathan Mensah due to suspension. They were out without Yuka Ritala due to, you know, the potential birth of his child. And Waylon dealing with injuries. So had to make some adjustments there. But, yeah, I think, you know, watching the game, watching the way this defense played, and I, you know, when I say the defense, I don't just mean the back four. It looked like the defense that we've seen, you know, this season, last season to some degree, in terms of when they play with four in the back. You know, there were guys giving away possessions in bad spots. I mean, you look at the chance that Vancouver had right at the beginning of the second half when Harrison Offal gives the ball away inside his own, you know, almost defensive third. I think it was a little bit further upfield. And they come down, you know, the shot obviously goes off the post, but these are the mistakes that when you're playing with three in the back, you really can't, or when you're playing with four in the back, I'm sorry, you really can't make. And there's the mistakes that cost this team a lot last year and even in the beginning of this year. So, you know, the three in the back kind of quelled some of these problems because there was more defensive stability back there. But moving into the playoffs, I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, how they handle this, because with Higuain healthy, with Pedro Santos now on the team, obviously Justin Merriman, Kakuta Mane playing well, you know, it's almost impossible to switch back to the three in the back unless you're going to get really creative or put one of these guys on the bench. But defensively, I think you might need that three in the back formation, especially going on the road to Atlanta, to you know, Toronto, things like that. Potential matchups of offensive teams that when you really need to shut things down and just try and get a result on the road. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they want to stick with the four and they trust it. I just, you know, I see the same issues time and time again with that back line.
Yeah, Pat, you know, I think you're right in a certain respect that it does look a little unstable along the back line. The one thing I do go back to is I keep, for some reason, thinking about that game at Real Salt Lake. And granted, that was at the end of a three-game week, but they played three in the back in that game, and I think that was the highest combined expected goals between two teams that American Soccer Analysis, I think that's the website, or yeah, that's the website. They had, you know, up to in the season up to that point. I mean, the expected goals number in that game was just unbelievable. The Crew looked like they couldn't stop any sort of counterattack. They didn't foul in the right spots. They basically just let Real Salt Lake, you know, let the attack run wild. And so when I compare it to a game like that, it looked a little bit more stable. I think part of the reason why was you have a Hector Jimenez at left back tucking in a little bit to target a winger and maybe limit some of the attack. That being said, I don't know. I think no matter what you do from a defensive standpoint, unless you're facing a bad offense and you're not going to in the playoffs, there's going to be some level of instability. And I think every team has its strengths and weaknesses. In the playoffs, I think you almost have to play to your strengths. You know you can score goals with this offensive combination. So if you're playing a road game, maybe you get a couple early and then you can, you know, reconfigure your lineup. But I think you have to go with your strength and, you know, understand that defense is going to be your weakness. It's just limiting that weakness.
Well, and I think that you make a good point with your strengths, because obviously they've found that attacking prowess again that, you know, maybe they lacked, especially when they were in the three in the back, you know, with Pedro Santos, who had some pretty ridiculous dribble moves in this game. Federico Higuain, who, while I don't think this was his best game, obviously he's playing well. You know, you've got Kakuta playing well, Justin playing well. I think that this is certainly a feared attack, and, you know, I didn't even mention Ola Kamara there. So, yeah, you can certainly play to your strengths. That worked in 2015. You know, they were able to lock things down a little bit better in the playoffs, especially that game in New York, where while playing with four in the back, they did kind of bunker a little bit. So, you know, there's certainly reasons to be optimistic about the attack. I also think we should point out this Vancouver team's pretty good and is pretty hot right now. You know, they're the top of the West, which, you know, going into the game, I think they were a point above.
Nice Zoolander reference, by the way.
Yeah. They were a point above the Crew. So, you know, a team that should be competitive, you know, especially when you're playing at their place. Yeah. So you're going to have to beat teams better than you in the playoffs, especially on the road. They had the chance to do that. Obviously, they only come away with a point. But, you know, something to keep in mind, this is a good Vancouver team, not, you know, some team in the middle of the Western Conference out there.
Another thing to keep in mind is you did bring up the fancy stats there, Andrew. Expected the MLS expected or leader in expected goals and assists right now, Ola Kamara, and I don't think we can understate how wrong, so thoroughly wrong, Ralph Schudell was last week when he said Ola had the yips, because guy is, you know, speaking of Zoolander, he is so hot right now, producing for Columbus at a great clip, and at least, you know, for a show where we've pointed out one of the other main flaws with this Columbus team is its lack of depth there at the striker position. But if you can have Ola Kamara continuing to produce at this clip, then it's no problem, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, as the somebody who was very wrong, as I say, and I will say, to continue the Derek Zoolander references, I need to go back to the Derek Zoolander school of people. Kids who can't read good and want to learn how to do other good stuff too. I need to go back to
that. Tight today.
But you know, the biggest thing with Ola producing at the clip that he's doing, I still fear for, God forbid, and I'm going to say knock on wood, if he does go down, where do we go from here, especially with the offense and, as you gentlemen so eloquently put, the formations and, you know, the offensive stability wasn't really there for a while, and now it's here. But if we lose that key cog there, I'm scared.
Yeah, you know, and you brought up the point about if Ola Kamara gets injured, the Crew is fortunate in the sense that they haven't had to broach that subject just because he's been so durable. He played in the Sporting Kansas City game despite, I think, only training once in full the 2 weeks prior because he got some sort of leg contusion in the FC Dallas game. So was playing hurt and still was able to contribute with a goal, even though it wasn't his best performance and wasn't 100% in that game. But I wrote about Ola Kamara for tomorrow's paper, so I have a couple stats. This was the first streak of four consecutive games with a goal in his MLS career. Hasn't done it since August 8th through August 25th when he was playing for, and, you know, sorry for my pronunciation advanced, Strømsgodset in Norway.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, he also had a stretch.
Better inflection next time.
he also had a three-game stretch, which he pointed out to me during our interview, where he had eight goals, one of which came against Rosenborg, which was the former team of Steve Clark. So he's had little stretches like this, but just talking to him today, he said there's a little bit of confidence there. And he talked about that initial adjustment when, you know, we talk about players that really catch the league by storm in their first year in the league. There's always kind of an adjustment. Defenses adjust, systems adjust. The Crew saw a lot of five in the back early in the season, and it was difficult for Ola Kamara to be consistent in that sense. But he said he's kind of bounced back, and he's able to adapt. And he ended our interview today by saying, I will get my chances. I will score my goals. So it all sounded like Liam Neeson in Taken, where he's like, I will get my vengeance. But no, I mean, he's incredibly confident. He's incredibly confident.
He does have a very
right
specific set of skills.
Right, exactly. One touch goals are his skills instead of killing his daughter's captors. But
as far as we know.
But anyway, so I don't want this to go off the rails, but basically, you know, he's a confident guy, and you know, that's the type of player you want to have confident down the stretch if you're Crew SC.
And certainly the case to see him. And you want, you know, yeah, exactly. You want a striker who's confident, who wants his goals, who thinks they're going to be coming. And he got some terrific service from Kakuta Mane. Patrick, I know you've kind of argued a bit, at least offline, that Kakuta Mane might be better suited playing that more natural wing position that he played in Vancouver, as opposed to the more central and attacking position he's played in Columbus. We saw him starting in favor of Justin Meerham, who had played a lot of games, played a lot of minutes recently, so at least ostensibly getting some time off to get subbed on later in the game, but putting in a very dominant performance. And does that, you know, mixed with the fact that Justin Meerham has been struggling a little bit, at least producing on the stat sheet over the past several weeks, and really in the second half, make it for an interesting battle as the playoffs are coming up on the left side of the field?
Well, I think there's a couple things to take into account here. First, if they do, you know, go with Kakuta in certain games, you know, do they play him wide, you know, like that in, you know, regularly, I guess. You know, we've seen him tuck underneath in the three in the back formation quite a bit. You know, even when he's played with four in the back, he's tried to kind of emulate Justin a little bit just because of that. That's the style they play. And I don't know for sure if this was a targeted tactical move by Greg and the team, or if this was something that, you know, that Kakuta did. It'll be interesting to talk to Greg about that. But I thought, you know, and maybe it was just his motivation to play well against Vancouver, but, you know, I just, him being out wide, him having the ability to go at guys with speed, go 1v1 with the step over moves like we saw in the assist. And then when, you know, he had the opportunity later in the game, obviously his goal came from the central area, able to come inside and kind of change things up. I know that they love the overlapping fullbacks, excuse me. But, you know, when you have a guy like Kakuta who's dangerous there, and when he's outside, there's always the chance for the through ball of him coming in towards the middle. You know, I just think if he's going to be on the field, that's kind of the role he should play, especially when Higuain's in there. He can kind of handle the central stuff. You know, Justin does a great job of working off Higuain, and I think that works fine when those two are on the field. But I think this presents another option for the team as a true winger and a guy who can serve in decent balls and beat defenders 1v1 out on the wing.
Yeah, and just a note on the Justin Meerham not playing, it was due to rest. Greg Berhalter felt that just because, you know, Justin Meerham had been, I think he had played six straight games with 89 or 90 minutes, and then also played the two for Iraq and, you know, had international flights. So, you know, so I think that's part of the reason for it. But the thing that Greg Berhalter did say today is that he agreed with you, Pat. I mean, it gives him a number of options based on matchups. You know, you can kind of configure the time in the game, either bring Kakuta on early or start Kakuta and bring Justin off the bench. You know, I didn't think Justin was incredible in this game. I didn't think he was awful. I mean, he did have that turnover that ultimately led to Vancouver scoring the goal. I don't think you can fault him for the goal based on that, though. You know, the one thing I do agree with is that if you can get Kakuta Mane in space, that's when he scored two of his best goals of the season. You look at the Minnesota goal, it's him charging up that middle lane. Nobody steps to him, and he's able to get, you know, running a few yards and then unleash his shot. In this game, he basically runs right up the middle of the field and is able to get his shot off. And he's pretty good from that area. He's pretty accurate. So, you know, I think as long as he's confident and as long as he's able to do those things where he's able to show off his speed and use his speed in a way that helps the team, I think it gives the crew a number of options. That being said, I don't really envision any scenario in which Justin Meerham is sitting for an extended period of time or sitting back-to-back games. So it really has to be kind of a niche matchup or something you're looking for to specifically get that talented aspect out of Kakuta.
And that parlays brilliantly into my point, Andrew. And that's, you know, I like what Patrick said about the overlapping fullbacks coming in and trying to assist mainly with Justin Meerham as he looks to play that inverted role. But you look at somebody like Mane. Mane is best when he is there to get the defense spread out, and that way the attackers can move into that space and try to exploit it. Cool little stat that I just pulled up here, guys. It's kind of interesting. Is Mane's pass completion in open field, so you know the central portion of the field, is over almost 86% by comparison with his position mate. Miram's at about 79% there, but both of them kind of go down in that final attacking third to about 66% for Miram and 64% for Mane. So very close, but those guys definitely operate a little bit better in space. And as we've pointed out on this program a couple times, Miram is good for the play that kind of leaves you with your mouth open wondering how he was able to get through five defenders and create an attacking opportunity on the net.
He is, and the issue is that he's got like a baseball average with it. His terrific baseball average is, you know, like 300, but that means he's only beating the guys 3 out of 10 times, and the other 7 times it seems to be going in the other direction. But looking at Mane, as you guys mentioned, there's, you know, the fact is he's always going to be sort of inextricably tied, at least throughout his Crew SC career, with that trade for Tony Chani. Chani obviously had an impact for Vancouver in that game. But news coming out this week on Twitter.com, Ralph, I know you at least caught this, of some speculation that Mane may be on his way out the door. Of course, this is the final year of his contract. I know there are some stipulations tied to it. If he were to re-sign with Columbus, or if not, at least in what might have to go to Vancouver. But what are we hearing about Kakuta Mane and his potential future?
Well, the big thing that we caught, and I have to credit it to the boss man, Patrick Goldan, for catching this. Farhan Devhai, I've never met the guy, but he's a Whitecaps correspondent who is pretty credible with usually most of this information. Said that he had an interview with Mane, and he stated that he wanted to go to Europe, even though he's keeping his options open with it being a final year of the contract. And Crew SC knew that this was a risk, and I know the two fine gentlemen on this panel with me both have talked to him. I think Andrew's got something that he would like to add about this situation.
Yeah, and a similar interview, I would say, you know, right at the open of the secondary transfer window. It was right around the time that, you know, a league source denied that the club was trying to trade Kakuta Mane, and, you know, wasn't going to do that. That wasn't something they were interested in. I kind of talked to Kakuta just about, you know, the trade rumor aspect of the secondary transfer window and kind of what his plans were beyond the season. And he was kind of wishy-washy on the idea of returning to MLS. And if you look just solely based on personnel, in addition to what Kakuta has said about this, you have Justin Merrim on the left side, who is under contract through the end of the 2019 season with an option for the 2020 season. You have Pedro Santos, who was signed on a 2.5-year contract on the right side. And we haven't seen Kakuta in the central attacking midfielder role. The Crew doesn't seem committed to the idea of potentially going to a 2-forward system. So just from a personnel standpoint, it doesn't seem likely that it would extend beyond this season. But the thing that Kakuta said then and now is that he's still hoping to show more over this last 4-game stretch, that he's still hoping to show more in the playoffs, and that he doesn't really want to commit either way on this until the end of the season. And Greg Belter has said something similar, that they'll discuss it at the end of the season, and I imagine at the very least there will be a discussion there. But I would not be shocked at all if Kakuta Mane, as a guy who has aspirations of playing international soccer, and is, you know, a 22-year-old, I mean, he's a young kid, that he explores going to Europe or you know, leaving MLS. And, you know, there's always a window to return. I mean, we've seen this with so many different guys where as a young kid they want to go abroad and they kind of, you know, take their path and it either works out or it doesn't, and then they come back. So, you know, it's not closing the door on the MLS forever, MLS forever, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just in conversations of talking with Kakuta, you know, it sounds like, as you said, he has big aspirations. And you saw why on Saturday. I mean, you know, I think his time in Columbus hasn't been obviously his most productive. He's done some good things, but as you mentioned, there's plenty ahead of him to on this roster to kind of keep him on the bench. And, you know, Andrew, when we were talking to him early in the year when it was, you know, about his fitness and things like that, I mean, eventually you got a sense that he was getting a little frustrated that he wasn't seeing the field. This is a guy who obviously has a lot of confidence in himself, just that type of player. And he should. I mean, that's kind of how his game builds, similar to Justin Merrim. So I believe that, you know, he wants consistent playing time and at a high level. If he's not getting it here, you know, maybe if he'd started from day one here, kind of like Tony has out in Vancouver, it'd be a different story. But, you know, I can't see Columbus, you know, putting up the kind of money that it might take to keep him here, or, you know, offering him enough playing time that would keep him happy. Like you said, there's always a chance that he leaves and comes back. So, you know, we'll see. But it would surprise me, and I think you're saying the same thing, Andrew, that it would surprise you if he were to be back on the roster next season.
Yeah, and, you know, I think an important point with this, and regardless of, you know, who won the trade, who lost the trade, I think there were a lot of people initially who said, you know, Kakuta's unhappy, he doesn't like the system or whatever. I think that's the part of that is maybe inaccurate, and I think we have to kind of zoom out on this and understand that this is a 22-year-old kid who has lived in the same place for 4.5 years, and all of a sudden, you know, at a moment's notice, he can't come to a contract agreement with the club that drafted him as a teenager, moves across the country, and, you know, can't get his car even to Columbus for a couple weeks, knows really nobody aside from people on the crew in Columbus, and is immediately thrust into a system where people expect him to perform, people expect him to be a savior on the right wing, and expect him to produce immediately. And it just doesn't work that way. I mean, I think, you know, especially talking about a young kid, I think that adjustment was always going to be a long one. The thing that Kakuta said this week that he does like about the crew is that he feels like he's learned a lot. He's learned a lot about the tactics of soccer. He feels like he's absorbing a lot. The frustrating part for him, obviously, is that the play time hasn't necessarily come, and that the results haven't always come. He's had his bits and pieces, and I think this was his most complete game. But I think you take the good with the bad, with the good and the bad with this. But I think it's worth noting that it was always going to be a difficult transition just based on the circumstances.
You know, speaking about taking the results, at least Columbus had a chance to take advantage of some results across MLS this weekend, some favorable results, and put some more space between them and Montreal. Were unable to do that, but you look at some of their performances, and you're also looking at what things might shake out, how things might shake out when the playoffs do get finalized. I know Columbus, per the fancy stats as well, is among the, what, I think like a 90, upper 90s chance of confirming Ralph, or locking down a playoff spot per Analysis Evolved. So a good chance this team's going to make the playoffs, but that means, as we've kind of hinted on again, they're going to at least play on the road for the majority there to make any noise. One of the teams that they could find themselves playing against, Atlanta United, who, of course, scored, what was it, 7 goals, had a football score line on Wednesday. A boring football score. It was like watching the Cincinnati Bengals.
There you go.
More touchdowns than the Bengals this season. I can say that as a Browns fan too. I'll take my small victories. But, you know, obviously a team that made a lot of noise over the weekend or week, getting 4 points. They drew, I believe, in their second game of the weekend, as I'm kind of glancing at scores. But Montreal dropping to New England, getting some other favorable results, around MLS. What are we looking? But then you see a team like Toronto again putting a hurting on LA, Chicago starting to putting space between them. We've hit that top three now look to be locked down. But what does Columbus look like and their chances in making some noise, given some of the other results and what the rest of the East seems to be doing, peaking at the right time?
You know, I think with the projections here, it's a 97% chance, according to Analysis Evolved. I believe they said it on the broadcast, Dwight and Neil did, that was just to sneak into sixth place. So the thing with that is it's mighty scary to be coming in at sixth place. Has it been done before to get to maybe an MLS Cup final? Absolutely. I believe Portland did it in 2015. I don't know if my panel can confirm or not. But
they got in on the last day. I don't remember what the where they stood.
Actually wasn't an MLS playoffs in 2015. Correction, that we skipped them.
Oh, was the league on strike that year? I forgot.
Yep, yeah, that happened.
But anyway, you know, the big thing is if you come in at six, you're likely, like you said, Bart, you're going to be playing New York or you're going to be playing Atlanta. And those are two places I don't necessarily feel entirely confident with, because New York, A, is very good in Harrison. We actually lost in 2015 when we were there. That was the best loss we've ever taken. But, you know, if you look at Atlanta United and their attendance figures from this weekend, getting 70,425, I believe, was the number. In for a soccer match. That's the largest crowd that we've ever seen in Major League Soccer. And I know we throw attendance numbers around willy-nilly on this program, but still, for American soccer, 22 years, 23 years old, that's pretty darn impressive to see in the United States. So,
And not recognized by Al Michaels, who incorrectly said last night that it was only 40,000 on the NFL broadcast.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Yeah. Oops.
But, you know, did he incorrectly, or do you think Goodell had him up to it? But, anywho, the big thing is, I don't want to go to Atlanta United because those guys are hyped normally when it's a regular season game. They have a shiny new stadium that they want to pimp out, you know, and they've got a really great team who can play some really great soccer. So it's tough. Can it be done? Absolutely. But I'm not really feeling great about Crew SC sneaking into that sixth spot.
Yeah, and to your point about Atlanta, I mean, aside from, you know, the aesthetics of it, I think they just are a bad matchup for them. I mean, it's just, for my take, just way too much speed. I think if you're playing four in the back, I think you really worry about deep balls and a center back missing, or, you know, missing a header like Jonathan Mensah did and it leading to a goal. And that's a game that I think could unravel pretty quickly. I think a game in Bridgeview, and obviously it's going to be an incredibly hyped game, but it's one that is maybe a little bit more doable. You know, Chicago hasn't been great of late. If they go into third place, it's not going to be with a ton of momentum. So I think that's a little bit more winnable as a game. But yeah, I think Atlanta would not be a great matchup for this team. And I think if NYCFC were to slip into the third position, would not be a good matchup for this team. But at least you'd have a dry run at it in the season finale.
To correct the earlier statement, Portland actually finished third in the West in 2015.
And they had that crazy shootout game, right? Or
yeah, they played
to PKs.
Kansas City.
Yeah.
Was SKC sixth then? Because one of those teams was last place.
Yeah, nope, SKC was sixth.
Sorry, I was looking at Seattle. I actually think that New York would be a terrible matchup for Columbus. I know we're going to see them next weekend, so we'll get to that. But Greg, you know, has tended to been able to I know there's been some bad games in New York in the regular season, but going back to 2015, some games in Columbus, you know, I think that's a team that you could get a result against at home, you know, assuming you play a two-leg series, get a result at home, go on the road. If you're playing a one-leg series, you could go three in the back against that team and I think have some success. You know, they like to play the way the Crew do and, you know, kind of create attacking chances that way. That press that they do kind of wears thin towards the end of the year. So I think that would be an okay matchup for them. I agree entirely that Atlanta would be a bad one. And, you know, I don't know how much the attendance would have to do with it, but just the fact that, you know, we've seen them twice this year and what they've done to the Crew, and I don't expect that to change. But the one thing I think with the playoffs, and we've seen it plenty of times, the, you know, once you get into the postseason, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, we talk a lot during the regular season about getting a result on the road and those type of things, but a hot team, and that's what Columbus is right now, and, you know, assuming they can maintain that going into the postseason, is a really dangerous thing. I do think this is Toronto's league to lose. I think they remind me a lot of, you know, several teams in the league, but to pick out a reference close to home, the Crew in 2008. you know, just a team that dominates throughout most of the regular season and, you know, just seems, you know, focused, especially because they lost last year, focused on getting to and winning an MLS Cup. You know, they were obviously disappointed. I think they have the most talent in the league. So, you know, that's probably where any run stops. But, you know, this is a team that I like, you know, in a lot of series, I think they could potentially, you know, do something just because they're a hot team. And that makes a lot of difference in MLS for whatever reason.
Well, and we talked about New York, and obviously Columbus have to be on the road against the Red Bulls. Not this weekend hosting, but the Red Bulls will have a game before that game, the U.S. Open. So you're catching a New York team that might also be a little bit winded. And if you are the Red Bulls, you know, you're looking at this as you obviously want to make the, you know, ensure that you've got a playoff spot. They are at least they're 6 points ahead of Montreal Impact from the sixth and seventh spot. They have in the same amount of games played. So again, they'd have to drop a drop at least two over these final four games to lose their ticket to the postseason. But again, you also want to see if you're the Red Bulls, you'd like to, a chance to play in Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League, perhaps next season. And you've got an SKC team that Columbus saw last week, and both of these teams pretty staunch defensively. And how do we think, A, you know, what do we think about this U.S. Open Cup matchup this week, and B, how does it impact New York and ergo Columbus on Wednesday or on the weekend?
Well, the big thing is, and there's an article that was out on MLSsoccer.com today, that Jesse Marsh made a really big effort to rest most of his starting players for this match because he's putting out such a emphasis that they wanted to take this very seriously. And I think that's adding to the legitimacy of what the Open Cup's really becoming in the United States. You know, you see it with the Deutsche Pokal in Germany or the FA Cup in England. You know, how serious a lot of these clubs take it, and even, you know, with FC Cincinnati, how serious that they were taking it is sort of a vis-a-vis Major League Soccer audition. But
hey, Ralph, did Cincinnati make it to the U.S. Open Cup final?
No, sir. They lost to the New York Red Bulls, who are playing in this game.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Okay. You know, you're starting to see the legitimacy of this, and I think people understand. You know, you look at UEFA with the Champions League and what prestige that is and how that occupies most people's Tuesdays and Wednesdays. CONCACAF, albeit, doesn't have the best Champions League out there, but it's still fun and entertaining soccer to watch and very accessible. So, you know, more publicity for Major League Soccer across the board, across the, you know, country, across the continent, if you can, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. So I fully expect, circling back around to this match now, as you said, Bart, and as we saw with Sporting Kansas City, they're defensively very good. They can't really finish a lot of their chances, and honestly, New York's very defensively sound, too. I wouldn't be shocked if this final's a 1-0 game, or I'm fully anticipating, as I'm sure a lot of people are, I love when finals go to penalty kicks, and I very realistically can see this match going to penalties.
In that those would be the only way either team would score goals?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I think just it's worth pointing out that, and to your point, Ralph, that Crew SC on Saturday is going to get a team in the New York Red Bulls that is a little bit fatigued. They are probably going to play a majority of their starting group. And I think in both of these home games for the Crew over this final two-game homestand, they'll play their team on Saturday. They'll play a team on Saturday that has already played on Wednesday. So
it's weird how that happens all of a sudden, right? After we dealt with that all year.
Yeah. So, I mean, and in that sense, you know, a lot of people and myself included talk about how other teams have games in hand on the Crew and that it will come into play. But this is the time now when you can say last weekend rested Justin Merrim. You can use that rest to your advantage, even though you don't have the games, but it places an added importance on these two home games. And that if you can take care of them, you're basically in the playoffs and you can set yourself up to potentially get a little bit higher seed.
In terms of the Open Cup, I think that Kansas City will win because they're at home. And that's all I've got to say about it. I do think it helps the crew, though. I do think it helps the crew, though, like Andrew was saying, on Saturday, just because, you know, the emphasis in this. Obviously, you need to take a full 3 points when you're at home. And like I was talking about earlier, you know, if New York's a team you play in the postseason, you'd love to have that kind of mental edge of knowing you just beat them, you know, relatively recently.
And that's why you tune in to the Massive Report podcast for stellar U.S. Open coverage on behalf of Patrick Murphy.
Yeah. I did watch the Cincy game.
The thing I do like about Sporting Kansas City's home games is that it's kind of like a double whammy when you allow a goal. Not only do you allow a goal and you feel bad about that, but then there's blue confetti that you're showered in, so then you feel doubly bad about the goal you just let in. So good on you, Sporting Kansas City, for, you know, I think that's what makes soccer fun. So I like that.
What are they called? The blue hell? Isn't that what it
is? I
think so.
Yep. Yep. And they don't, you're right, they don't lose at home. I mean, they rarely do, so they're very good at home.
You used to be able to throw things and get confetti. I did feel some confetti in the Nordic a couple weekends ago, got some. But, yeah, they don't really let us throw things too much anymore over there. But, you know, moving on and looking at this New York preview, this game coming up for Columbus this weekend. You guys mentioned it. I think I'm not too good at math, but I think if Columbus can get 3 points, at least they get close to clinching, if not. But you've got some decisions to be made for Columbus. You look at the return. You look at, you know, what are they going to do at that left wing? Do they want to give Kukutamane another run out there? Do they want to give that spot back to Justin Miram? You're still trying to get back to fitness here with your the fullback positions. Jimenez has been all over the place. Probably one of the most consistent defenders for this team the whole season, no matter where they seem to put him. But also big points for your second to last home game, and want to keep a good thing going because this is a team that's gone, I believe, now 5 straight without a loss.
6 straight. And 6, Pat's, sorry. Pat's pointing with his fingers to let us know. But the number I keep going back to with the crew is 48, which is the average, I believe, over the past 5 years of the final playoff qualifier in both conferences. So it's the average of the averages. And if the crew can hit that number, basically, in order to match the crew, it would require the Montreal Impact to go 4-2-0 down the stretch to be able to match that. And if you look, they play 2 games against Toronto, 1 against NYCFC, and 1 at Atlanta. I just don't see 4 wins down that stretch. So if you can get 4 points out of this span, and you can go into those last 2 games not needing a point, but if you do get a point, it helps your standing. I think that just continues to build your confidence. The one thing I will point out, they were maybe one of the best teams in the league, I'd say, about 5 to 6 weeks ago, but that injury to Daniel Royer really kind of set them back, and they've tied a few games recently. They've been in games, but you don't see as much firepower on offense, and I think that's maybe something the crew can take advantage of.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, a win in this game is important, you know, as I mentioned, not only for the standings, but mentally. You know, this New York team's good. And just for reference, for those people that don't have the standings in front of them, Columbus is currently sitting on 44 points. So as Andrew mentioned, those 4 points would be that line where Chicago currently sits at 48. But, you know, New York's been good. They're not great on the road, but no one is in MLS. I mean, they're one of the better teams, I guess, on the road. But, you know, coming in after the Open Cup loss, you know, a team that scored 50 goals this – oh, sorry, I'm looking at New York City. They're not. They're still okay on the road. But a team that scored 41 goals on the year, I knew they'd scored a decent amount. You know, something that Columbus will certainly have to be, you know, aware of. You know, we talked about kind of the defensive woes just a little while ago. So – You certainly have to be wary of that. A guy like Bradley Wright Phillips up top is always dangerous. But, you know, this is a game that I think, especially given that New York will have played on Wednesday, probably put a lot into that. I think crew fans will be hoping for overtime there. And, you know, I think this is a game that not only do you need to get 3 points, but you really should.
Yeah, and to establish that point in the Eastern Conference and, you know, winning over the New York Red Bulls, albeit is not the feat it was of past years with, you know, the Thierry Henrys and the Tim Cahills of, yesteryear. But you know, anytime you can get a big win over the Red Bulls, you'll take it. For me, because I love storylines. You know, we're going to go to another week and another former Crew SC player with Dilly Duca, who's going to be featured in there. So it'll be interesting to see if
will he?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe
he's been
featured.
He's been on the bench, but you know, you have to think Jesse Marsh. He's not a dumb guy. You know, he's probably likely going to give Dilly Duca a look because, you know, Dilly's played these guys in practice. He knows what Berhalter's going to do. He's going to know what to look for. So I wouldn't be surprised if Duca maybe makes an appearance. I don't think he'll start, but, you know, he's going to be kind of that.
He might really, if, you know, depending on how the Open Cup stuff goes. I mean, if they're, you know, they're pretty fatigued, I could potentially see that.
Sorry for making
you sound like a dummy.
Hey, it's nothing I'm not used to in the 6 months I've worked between with you and Andrew. So, you know, listening to you guys talk about soccer most of the time. Anywho, I digress. So I think with Duca, there's a very real possibility that you could look at him maybe being on the field at some point during this, albeit I don't know how much time he saw with the three in the back, how much he knows about Pedro Santos, if anything. You know, or anything about this tactics, but I could see him kind of playing that sleeper agent role, not to be, you know, different at all or anything like that, but I could see him being that guy that, you know, stealing signs in baseball is the big thing. So,
anybody else? we don't know if Dilly Duca owns an Apple Watch, so that's hard to know. And that, I know that's a Yankees Red Sox reference, and that's
topical,
not germane to this podcast, but, I think the one thing I'd point out with the first matchup, and it was a 2-0 loss for the Crew at Red Bull Arena, I basically throw that game out the window. I think Artur broke his wrist 38 seconds into that game. Mohamed Abu came in cold off the bench. Alex Crenali, you know, concedes a penalty kick and injures his ankle in like the 30th minute. So I think you lose that game in about the second minute, and it's really not one you can take a whole lot away to evaluate. So I think this will be a truer test of how these two teams match up, and if they do meet again in the playoffs, what that will look like. So I think that's what I'm most looking forward to, is seeing, you know, how two that's a good point. How two teams, you know, match up after a game that really unraveled quickly for the Crew in early in the season.
Well, and you mentioned that that Artur loss, and you know, reminds me. You look at, of course, last weekend and over these past 2 weeks. We've really been praising some of the performances put in by Mohamed Abu. Obviously, Artur suffered some injuries, been in and out of the lineup, perhaps even in and out of favor a little bit. Well, not out of favor, but at least out of Greg Berhalter's top choice there to be paired next to Will Trapp. But what are we thinking with that matchup, and who's going to be next to Will Trapp when the game gets started? Of course, Will Trapp, we got some news earlier today, part of the MLS Team of the Week on the bench, Kakuta Mane representing at that left wing spot.
I think going back to Artur and Abu, I think, you know, you saw the second half substitution there, or the halftime substitution, I guess. Obviously, Mohamed had picked up a yellow card in the first half, but, you know, I think maybe I'd taken for granted how good Artur was, because I thought he made a difference in the second half. And I didn't think Abu played poorly in the first half. There were a couple giveaways, but, you know, Artur is just a class player in this league. I think that, you know, at this point, you've down the stretch, I think he's your guy you got to run with. You know, Mohamed was hot for a few weeks. He's playing very well. A guy now that you have confident that you can bring off the bench if you need a central midfielder for some reason. But I imagine they go back to Artur just because of what he gives them options-wise in the midfield.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, you know, at halftime, the sub is mainly because they know what Vancouver can do on the counter, and right, Mohamed Abu is carrying a yellow card into the second half. So if he makes, you know, one stupid foul during that span, you're down a man. That being said, I do agree with Pat that Artur had a great second half, and I think it's worth noting with him that as a young guy, and this being his first full season of professional soccer, I think he played 4 games for Sao Paulo last summer. He's still getting used to what an 8-month, 9-month season looks like. So, you know, he played well for a long period of time, but that's a long time to have to be at a very high level. And I think he's learning, you know, what that does to his body, how he needs to rest and recover every day, what he needs to do to, you know, be efficient for that lengthy span. And he had the hamstring injury. I think it took him a while to get back to that level he was used to. But if he can get that back over the final four games of the season, and you have him available as that option, you know, for the a potential playoff matchup, I think that's a positive. The other thing worth noting is that in the likely event that Artur is not playing for the Crew next year, you feel confident knowing that Abu can at least fill that role or compete for a starting job. So that's certainly there as well.
Ooh, the likely event that Artur is not playing. So let's touch on that a little bit.
Did you guys hear that? I think Twitter just exploded.
Yep, I know there's been a little bit of speculation. You know, one of at least the consistencies is supposed to be if you loan out MLS loan deals that there's a buy option at the end of it. Are you inferring, perhaps, Andrew, that Crew SC would not meet that option, or that option might not be part of the loan agreement?
No, there is an option to buy. I mean, you know, typically when Brazilian teams loan out young players, there is a very high buy option. So it's something that, in order probably to meet MLS standards, it would have to be negotiated down. I say likely in that it's more likely than not that he's playing somewhere else next year. I think he likes Columbus. He likes, you know, being able to play and have an impact at a professional level. The Crew certainly likes him, and I think it's something they'll discuss in the offseason. And, you know, why wouldn't you, because he's been so talented? But, you know, I, it's similar to Kakuta that I wouldn't be shocked if he's playing somewhere else next year. Not at all saying that, you know, the Crew wouldn't want his services. I think they'd be thrilled to have him as a starting central midfielder for years to come. I just think that, you know, given certain – you know, given certain parameters, I think it might be difficult.
All I am going to say is that I want to make sure that Alex Stanek, when he listens to this episode, has a friend, a close friend there nearby with him to look out for him, make sure everything's going to be all right. Everything is going to be all right, Alex. Everything's going to be all right for Caressi. We've still got a great season, lots of MLS 2017 campaign to go. And, you know, and maybe we'll get Alex a beer from one of our terrific sponsors while
nice
he's
segue.
Listening to the game or listening to the podcast to help, you know, ease some of that pain. You can hit either of them up. Head over to Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, or landgrantbrewing.com, or Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, and www.oldnortharcade.com for more information. Andrew, I don't know if your agreement didn't come back from Dispatch and Gatehouse, so I'm not sure if you were provided permission to make a pick, but we typically do that traditionally here at the end of this here podcast, predict the outcome of a game. It's a pretty novel idea we came up with, and we're going to let it...
Totally original, too, by the way.
Yeah, we're gonna let Patrick Murphy lead it off for you in case you want to get the hang of it, and if you want to dip your toe in, by all means. But Patrick Murphy, what do you have for the outcome for this upcoming game?
As negative as I was on the game last weekend, I'm going to be pretty positive about this one. Having watched New York a decent amount this year, I think that Columbus, like I said earlier, I think Columbus match out pretty well, especially if this team either rests some of their starters after playing midweek or come in with some tired legs. I'm going to go with like a 3-1 Crew SC win.
Wow.
3-1. I like it. You're coming back to you. That was the spirit of Alex, you know, taking control
yeah, that's it.
Of you.
Oh, and in comes Falcao.
Yeah, there we go. Mandatory. We actually are contractually stipulated to name drop Falcao at least one out of every 1.3 podcasts. That's how we make all our big bucks. So I appreciate that, Patrick. Cha-ching. Ralph, what's your pick?
You know, I'm fully anticipating, and what I'm looking forward to on Wednesday night is, like I said, I think there's a very real possibility that this game can go to extra time. And, you know, that's to log that many minutes in such a short period of time, especially with a quick turnaround on a game, is going to be difficult. I think Crew SC continue to ride the unbeaten streak at home. That being said, though, it's going to be a 1-1 tie.
Ooh. Ralph Schudel, the little rope-a-dope, making it sound great, and then, nope, 1-1 tie from Ralph. Still extending the unbeaten streak for the Crew, though. Andrew, any picks for this one?
Yeah, certainly, and you know, we've made predictions on things before, so I feel comfortable I agree with Ralph. Actually, I'm going to say a 1-1 tie. The New York Red Bulls recently have been, you know, the masters at tying soccer games, and I think they'll come in with the mentality of not giving up too much. I think there is potentially a sense of, you know, being able to underestimate this team, knowing that they play on Wednesday, knowing that they, you know, won't have their 100% group in there. So I think in that sense, it might be easy for the Crew to allow an easy first goal and then score later. But I don't think they'll lose this game. I think the unbeaten streak, which would be their longest, I think since 2011, will be intact. But I think it will be a 1-1 tie.
Absolutely. And so a couple 1-1 ties, a 3-1 pick from Pat Murphy. I'm, to the surprise of everyone, going to go with a Columbus Crew SC win. I'm just, you know, screw it. We're going to say shutout 3-0 for Columbus. I called that Thunder Bastard last week. They ended up going to Kakutamane. I may have said it was going to come from Muhammad Abu, but I meant Kakutamane when I said it. And I think we're going to get the first goal for his career for Pedro Santos in this game, and Crew SC is going to get a dominant victory so I can get a haircut next week. Ralph, I know you've got one more point before we close it out.
One thing that I want to do as a service both for Alex Stanek and for Patrick Goldan is to mention that we will be experiencing the dark arts of Felipe, who is a master of the dark arts, presumably if he plays for the Red Bulls. So everybody just, you know, keep your composure. He does this. He's not a nice man. So,
to be fair, so does Pedro. So,
this is true.
But Felipe is the master.
Oh, okay.
And he's Christian Martinez is the apprentice.
Thank God. And was fined for doing so. I'll have you know, the league office. Issued a fine for that.
Andrew,
so.
Do you know the money? Because I've heard it all over the place. I'm just curious, just out of curiosity.
It's not much. It's not. It's not.
He doesn't make a lot.
It's not
of
in
money.
The high thousands or anything like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't sure because I heard a very high figure, and I said that's like a third of his paycheck, and that can't be right. So.
Yeah, it's not something to where, like, you know, if an MLB player's, you know, suspended for 5 games, issued a, you know, $25,000 fine. It's, I mean, I don't think it's anywhere close to that. So,
okay. That's all I had for you.
We got to get those Tam bucks somehow, baby. If it's not finding guys for diving, then how are we going to, you know, you just think about that. All the Tam and Gam money that's going to Columbus thanks to finding guys for diving. No, who knows how the Don Garber slush fund works. Anyway, that should do it for this week. I want to thank again Andrew Erickson for joining us, for Alex Stanek, for Patrick Murphy, Ralph Schudel, everyone else. We'll see you. Bye, buddies.